As always, it is so good to be with you. And this evening's gospel reading reveals the ongoing or the continuing pattern of Jesus teaching the crowds using parables and then withdrawing with his disciples to provide further explanation to them. The first parable in the gospel reading is called the parable of the weeds, or more specifically, it is the parable of the tares. The weed is tares. Let's review this story just for a moment. The good farmer sows wheat seeds in his field. His enemies come in behind him and sow seeds of tares among the wheat. See, if you, as a farmer, tares are weeds that are basically indistinguishable from wheat until the time of harvest. That's how identical they look. And as the tares grow, the workers begin to notice what's been done. And they go to the farmer and they ask him if they can pull up the tares. But what does the farmer say? The farmer says to wait until harvest time because he doesn't want any of the wheat to be pulled up by mistake. So when harvest time does arrive, the workers come in and they bundle the tares and they reap the wheat. They burn the bundles of tares, and then they store the wheat in the barn. Now, when the disciples got Jesus in the house and in private, they asked him, they said, "What does this parable mean? How are we to take this parable?" Here's something that is remarkably interesting that really highlights or hones in on the significance of this parable to the disciples. Jesus shared not one, but three parables. But it is only this parable that the disciples say, "Can you clarify for us? Can you give us a little more clarification?" That is a substantial fact. That's very important to understand. That's how that the words touch them. So let's listen in to Jesus' further instruction of the parable. He says the sower is Jesus. The field is the world. The wheat seeds are those souls who belong to Jesus and eagerly desire to do the will of the Father. The tares, on the other hand, are those who in the world who choose to perform deeds of evil over good, and they are cold, indifferent, or even hostile to Jesus. And to allow the good, to allow the good wheat to continue maturing, the evil is allowed to remain until such time that God sends the reapers, who are the angels, to separate the two, with the good entering into heaven and with the evil being cast into the eternal lake of fire. That's powerful, and it's also sobering. Can you see why this parable could have caught the attention of the disciples? Now, there's two great mysteries in this parable that we need to think about. Probably for the rest of our lives, we'll be contemplating these. And they have a lot to do with what's going on in the world today. Here's the first great mystery. God allows evil to coexist with good in this life. God allows evil to coexist with good in this life. Now, if you notice very carefully, the farmer is not the one who sows the bad seeds of tares, is he? But he does, in this case, he allows the tares to remain. He says, leave them there in order that no wheat would be mistakenly pulled up. See, causing something to happen and allowing something to happen are two hugely different ideas. See, God is not the author of sin. God is not capable of doing evil. But he does allow, in some cases, that evil to exist. Now, there are many reasons for that. We could take a couple of months just talking about all the reasons. There's no one reason. There's many reasons for that. But the specific one that is given today in the parable is Jesus says that he waits patiently. He allows these things to happen so that those who desire to do the will of God may grow. That's substantial. How this works is a great mystery, I'll be honest with you, and I don't pretend to fully grasp it in any way, but Jesus understood it, and not only here he says it, but in other places, and also the apostles. They understood this concept to be part of the order of life in this world as we know it. What does Paul do? He affirms the same thing, which is the second reading in next week's Mass. He affirmed it as well in Romans 8 when he says this: all things work together for the good of those who love the Lord and are called according to his purposes. Second great mystery: Jesus will one day return and set all things right. God is patient, but there is a time when the patience runs out. And this is known as the great day of judgment. It is the day when the works, the desires, and the intentions of every soul, myself, you, everyone that's ever existed, are brought to light. And then he says that the just will be gathered into God's kingdom forever, and they will shine like the sun. What's he talking about? He's talking about the glory of God. It's like the glory of Jesus and Elijah and Moses on the Mount of Transfiguration. They're in the immediate presence of God, and it's just a glowing kind of situation. And then he says those who have rejected God, they will be cast into what is called the eternal lake of fire, where they will be separated from him forever and ever, all of eternity. Now, I know, I understand that you can discount and rationalize these two points away all you want. That's a matter of personal choice. But I always go back, as I think about these things, I always go back to the fact that Jesus refers to these matters on numerous occasions, and that the scriptures, the apostles, and the church for 2,000 years have affirmed these realities as well. I truly believe that's why Jesus said at the end of the reading, what did he say? He who has ears ought to hear. And he's not talking about corn. These are great mysteries of the faith, to be sure. But let me move within the next 2 minutes to a couple of life applications. How do we practically apply these two great concepts or mysteries into our lives? Life application number one: grow as a child of God. Grow as a child of God. God is patient. He gives you time to grow. You have from the moment of baptism to the time that you draw your last breath. See, what God has given all of us is what you might consider to be a period of grace. It's a time in which we are encouraged to grow deeply in the goodness of our faith. God wants you to grow, even if it means suffering a little while from the effects of evil in this world. The saints wholeheartedly affirm that concept, but it's one that's hard. It's one that's difficult to put our arms around, but we have to address it. See, some suffering in life is part of growing because it moves us outside of our comfort zone in order that we can be transformed into something greater. Have you ever been in a situation where you've suffered and there's been good that's come out of it, that you've grown out of it? Well, think about this. If the little mustard seed, which you can barely see, it's so small, if it wasn't buried in the soil, how would it ever become one of the largest plants in the garden? That's a good question. Well, it wouldn't. It'd still stay that little seed. God wants us to grow. You're called. You're given the grace to grow as a child of God. Life application number two: practice the virtue of patience. This is a parable about patience. See, growing takes time. You can't automatically just sort of shift gears in growing. It takes time. And the virtue of patience, or the old-fashioned word for it, long-suffering, becomes a necessity. It becomes absolutely important. See, God has not abandoned us. Sometimes that's where rational thought takes you today. God isn't abandoned, or even worse, God doesn't exist, or he wouldn't allow these things to happen. But God has not abandoned us during our growing pains, but as a reality, he is closer to us than he's ever been before. He's as near can get. And so we have to learn. One of the parts of growing and maturing in our faith is to grow in patience, to grow in the long suffering in life. And here's the beautiful part about it. See, when we grow in patience, we grow, we learn to trust God in all situations. And when we trust God in all situations, we receive tremendous, absolutely wonderful peace. Peace that this world cannot take away from us. That's the beautiful thing. And really, isn't that what people are searching for today, is peace? In all the things that we pursue in life, we're just wanting some peace. Well, this is how we get to the true peace, and God will do that. The more we learn to patiently wait upon God, the more peace we will have, which is definitely a great sign that we're growing in Him. Third and final life application, be prepared to meet Jesus when He returns. Jesus' return is one of the great affirmations of the faith. As a matter of fact, during the Mass, we affirm it at least three times, at least in the prayers, in the Eucharist, in the Word. See, Jesus' return is a given. That's a reality. The big question is this. Here's the big practical question. Will you be ready to meet Him? Will I be ready to meet Him and give an account of our lives when He does, when we stand before Him? And Jesus, as a disciple, because we're disciples, He simplifies what God is going to ask of us, the record that we have to present to Him of what we have done in our life. And it's simply put this way: how did you love God, and how did you love others? That's the only thing that we're going to take with us that really matters. That's the treasure of heaven. No matter how simple, no matter how small or large, it is the acts of love which we will stand before the Father and the Son to tell as He looks at us and judges us on the great day of judgment. Are you ready? I'd like to leave you with a couple of thoughts for reflection this evening. You know yourself better than anybody. Can you say this, that your outward life is an inward reflection of the love that you have for God and others? Does it sort of flow naturally out of your heart? And the second thing is this. If you were to die this evening, or Jesus was to come back this evening, where do you think you would spend eternity? Serious business. God bless all of you.